Good morning. We'll call the Senate Finance Committee together. Today is January the 25th. With me today is Co-Chairman Olson, Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Merrick, and Senator Keel, and Senator Stedman is on travel status. Today we have an overview of the state's deferred maintenance budget being presented by OMB Director Neil Steininger. Also, we're going to be covering the deferred maintenance for DOT and the university. With that, Mr. Director, please come to the table and begin with your presentation.
Good morning. For the record, Neil Steininger, Director of the Office of Management and Budget.
And for the record, Jason Sokolaskis, Department of Transportation, Public Facilities Director.
And thank you for inviting us in this morning to talk about deferred maintenance of state facilities. I'll cover some topics of funding and financing deferred maintenance, and Director Sokolakis will discuss how DOT is involved in the prioritization and the actual execution of that maintenance. So just to start, a quick just definition of deferred maintenance. So deferred maintenance is a maintenance or repair projects that have been postponed outside of the normal operating maintenance activity in an agency, either due to lack of funds or just because they could not be accomplished within those appropriations or those activities. The state of Alaska has over 2,400 facilities. That includes the university, with about 20 million square feet of space spread across all 15 state agencies and spread across almost every community within the state. There's really a statewide impact to maintenance funding, and it hits into every community and is touching every single agency and every single program that we operate here at the state. But the nature of those facilities really does vary by the agency. We have standard office buildings. We have buildings like the Capitol that we're in today. But we also have, remote buildings out for field workers in the Department of Fish and Game or Department of Natural Resources that have much different characteristics than the buildings that we're seeing in today here.
Please proceed.
So there's not really a definitive rule on the exact level of funding necessary to ensure that buildings are adequately maintained. But there are some ranges that we look at and that are published by independent organizations to give a general guideline on funding. So the National Research Council publishes a range of 2 to 4% of the replacement value of your facilities. The most recently published replacement value of state facilities, excluding the university, so just state of Alaska, executive and legislative branch, is about $7.7 billion. So that's if we had to rebuild every single facility in the state, it's estimated that will cost us about $7.7 billion. So that range, the 2 to 4 range, would be $150 million to about $300 million. 1% sometimes is quoted. It's a little bit lower than that published value. That would be $76.8 million. So really, that's kind of the general range. Again, there's no real perfect spot within that range of dollars. So on slide 4, we have a summary of the funding we actually have in the fiscal year 24 budget proposal. It totals about $113 million. So as you can see, that is less than the 2% at $150 million, but greater than that low range 1% at 76. It's split between both the operating and capital budgets. In the operating budgets across all agencies, we have about $77.8 million of operating maintenance funding. So that's your day-to-day maintenance, the people going around the buildings, replacing air filters, that kind of activity. In the capital budget, we have a number of appropriations for more significant maintenance activities. So we have about $29 million in statewide deferred maintenance that's operated out of the Office of Management and Budget in coordination with the Division of Facility Services that distributes across all state agencies. And then a couple of more specific projects. In the Department of Fish and Game, we have a specific project for hatchery maintenance and a specific project for both vessel and aircraft maintenance. In the courts, we have $3 million for deferred maintenance on court facilities. They are a separate branch of government, so it makes some sense to have a separate appropriation for their maintenance. And then the Department of Corrections, we do have a specific project this year that we've added that's a little bit of a greater need than would be fit in our normal deferred maintenance process, and that's for security doors and windows throughout the correctional institutions. Slide five is a historical look back at the deferred maintenance appropriations that have been made over the last 6 years. So as I mentioned on the prior slide, we have about $29 million in the budget through the Office of Management and Budget that gets distributed across state agencies. We've been using that mechanism of prioritization for these 6 years, and this slide shows you how it's been distributed in each year. One thing to note, in fiscal year 2021, the reason you only see $5.9 million is because that budget was the budget enacted during COVID. And if those that were here recall, the legislature adjourned early and we didn't have a full capital budget that year, and deferred maintenance was just one of those things left off. But you can see in the following year, in 2022, the $49 million being, you know, making up for that difference missed in 21. But when you look at this, you can see, you know, it sort of follows a logic that might make sense for those that follow state budgets and state facilities. Department of Corrections receives a large amount in each year because they have, you know, quite a few fairly complex facilities that cost a fair amount to maintain. You can also see some significant amounts of money going to the university out of that statewide deferred maintenance pot. Family and Community Services is another. They maintain all the 24-hour facilities that used to be part of Health and Social Services. So that'll be your Pioneer Homes, your juvenile justice facilities. You can see in 22 and in 23, fairly significant amounts of money going there.
Please proceed.
Slide six is an illustration of the overall backlog of deferred maintenance based on the most recent reports from the agencies in cooperation with Facility Services. We have backlogs of a little over $700 million in maintenance projects needed. Again, this number excludes the university, and we'll have an update from the university on their backlog as well. You can see the largest portion of the backlog is the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities at $288 million. They have a lot of facilities on the road system for road maintenance, as well as other, you know, activities. They really have a very statewide presence. And then Department of Corrections with correctional institutions. DNR has a lot of remote field sites. And so they have quite a bit of maintenance required in those facilities as well.
Please proceed.
And so here I'll hand it over to Director Sakalakis to discuss how we do the allocation process. This is a collaborative process between both OMB and the Division of Facility Services.
Thanks, Neil, and thanks again for the opportunity to be here today to present. Overall, I'll be covering the
you
overall.
You identify yourself.
Jason Sakalakis, Department of Transportation Public Facilities Director. Thanks again here today. I'll be covering overall the approach that we utilize to both identify deferred maintenance lists and needs, and then how we prioritize those functions. We'll be going through those today. Overall, like Neil said, it's a collaborative process. OMB facilitates collection of different deferred maintenance needs across all agencies. From there, we have a statewide facilities council that has assembled executive branch members that prioritize the deferred maintenance projects which have been identified. Our facilities council normally meets through several different workshops, and that occurs normally starting kind of in February through May, with the goal of turning over a prioritized list to OMB in June. Projects that are prioritized, we look at significant factors, which I'll be covering a little bit more in the presentations on future slides. But primarily, they're looking at facilities importance to the agency for delivering their services, the building systems within a building that can impact their service delivery, and then also the urgency in which the need needs to be met. Looking at these factors, basically, we create a project value index, is what we call it, which is the overall rating for the deferred maintenance project.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sakalakis, thanks for coming here this morning. I'd like to go back to slide six, the one that's before. You got two deferred maintenance backlog columns there for DOT. Can you tell me what the difference is between the two?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, yes, thank you. Basically, the Department of Transportation Public Facilities, the first column there is actually physically the DOT assigned buildings. This would be something familiar to our DOT highway stations and operation centers, strictly for DOT. The DOT Public Building Fund is some of the buildings that we sit in here today, and several other office buildings that are part of a separate program for reinvestment. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's concerning that DOT has got such a backlog that's going on there, and that realizing that DOT is in charge of the airports and the aviation component that rural Alaska is so dependent on, and obviously any compromise within the maintenance of airport facilities can lead to some bad, tragic consequences. Has indeed aviation been compromised by this backlog?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, values within regards to deferred maintenance include the aviation facilities in our outlying areas and communities. So included in that deferred maintenance backlog is also those facilities out in those remote communities.
I continue, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
The concern I have is maintaining the airports out there when we have heavy snow years, and our snow years where we've got icing that is, it's warm and it gets icy, so that you have a hard time stopping the airplane. And the graders that are less than pristine, obviously, that have been recycled and trying to, I can't even find parts for, is the main complaint I've been hearing from the rural airports up in western Alaska. And that is included in here?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, the facilities needs in those locations is included in those numbers.
The equipment is not part of the facility.
The equipment is not included in the deferred maintenance backlog associated with facilities, which is presented here today.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed.
So moving on, looking at basically the project index value and how we reach conclusion to rank the projects. We look at, again, I was referencing three primary factors, which are our mission alignment index, system factor index, our system factors, and priority of needs. I reference that also the committees and the State Facility Council meets throughout several months. So there are other factors and open discussions with the executive branch agencies that are part of that committee. If there's another known attributes outside these functions, we do actually take those into account. Some of the examples that have been brought up on those are basically like return on investment, depending upon the project, any matching funds that may be able to utilize to help fund the project, or eligibility as a finance energy savings performance project. So,
questions? Please proceed.
I'm to further go into a little bit more detail on each of these factors. Again, the mission alignment index is determined by the agency facility council member that's there. So they define if a facility is a priority or essential to delivering their primary mission. Along with determining, besides how critical the facility is, the agency mission, it also considers how capable the service or how capable the facility is to deliver the services it needs to, how it's utilized, and the number of people or citizens or services it impacts, and also reviews and considers the availability of other facilities within the location of that facility. Basically, the most critical facilities for an agency are defined by this factor, and we all realize that there's a lot of critical facilities within an agency, but our intent here with this is to also understand that they do have a varying degree of priority. And with regards to review of this, it allows us to basically better review management programs and guides our investment and divestiture decisions.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. Jason, welcome to your, I think, one of your first times at the finance table, Senate Finance. Just under your formula, under your three categories, and I'm backspacing, Mr. Chairman, I apologize, but where would you put life, safety, and health under one of these three?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that'll actually be placed in our system factor, which I'll be going over kind of next. There's a life safety component to a lot of that, and that actually does extend into our needs as well, and it'll be one of the critical components of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Please proceed.
So, in further looking at the Mission Alignment Index, as you can see, it's graded into critical, important, supportive, and what we'll say is other or kind of non-mission critical. Some examples of those under like a critical facility for Department of Transportation, you can see it would probably be, you know, key maintenance station, hub maintenance stations. For Department of Corrections, it'd be a correctional center. Education, it'd be the schools, et cetera, would be their critical facilities. Looking into maybe important and supportive, quick examples of that would be on certain office buildings for delivery of their services. And then maybe a non-mission critical or other category would be something similar to like a warehouse or a storage facility. So just trying to gain clarity on scale of buildings and needs. So.
Next.
In reviewing, this is where we touch on a little bit of the life, health, safety that you asked about, Senator Bishop. And looking into this, we see this side covers both the systems and the needs function. Systems are prioritized kind of by the life, health, safety structure. Some of the systems within a building that'll address those are examples are, you know, your sprinkler systems, your fire systems, structural components. You can get into your other mechanical systems, those kind of things that could lead to life, health, safety, but that's our top factor for a system review. You also view envelope and shell. That includes kind of your roof, walls, windows, those kind of things. Mechanical and electrical, you look in your HVAC plumbing powers. Those are the kind of basically the examples there in those systems. And then we also review the interior and exterior grounds, interior doors, walls, floors, those kind of things. Need is identified basically within three different categories: critical, important, and necessary. The definitions there are provided on the slide, but to quickly go over that, a critical need would be, again, life, health, safety, or anything associated with updating of codes that could lead to a life, health, safety issue. Important, you kind of step down there, is basically a required action that probably needs to be taken within the next 5 years or so to avoid any service interruptions or to take action to prevent any life health safety issues or code issues. And then necessary is an overall attention to preclude further deterioration and potential downtime of a facility. So again, something that should be done.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sokolowskis, thanks for the presentation. How do you balance between and among the different missions of different agencies, right? Something critical to the mission of the Department of Corrections, keeping the locks locked on the gates, versus something critical to the Department of Law, you know, keeping lawyers working on their computers, somewhat different priorities on a statewide basis.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. You're exactly right, and that's what this formula intends to do. So part of how this gets implemented, which will kind of be covered in the next slide, so you guys are right on target, I appreciate that, is with the Mission Alignment Index, that allows a representative that's on the basically Facilities Council, they are the sole entity that ranks the priority of the facility within their agency, associate their agency. So there is a scoring criteria within this that is directly identified and taken into account for the department that's on that committee. So that actually weights their input with regard to the importance of their critical facility. And then the other two factors, both systems and need, basically are allowed to be scored, but it's done as a committee scoring. So basically everybody has an active discussion on what's presented by the entities within the Facilities Council. And then what is done there is it's averaged. Everybody inputs and scores the process, and then it's averaged. And then obviously these are then combined to make the overall ranking for the project.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Please proceed.
So what's presented here is a quick a summary or a quick excerpt from our last prioritization cycle. Here you can see a couple things to look at. This is what a 1BC is after we're done with the prioritization process. As you can see within the Mission Alignment Index here, you can see basically the department here, what's ranked is each of the top priorities were a critical building essential to the department delivering service, which is very important. The system factor, and again, need, just like I covered before, was actually averaged here and was determined to be a high priority system factor need. And then in short summary, just wanted to cover during the last prior cycle, the Facilities Council basically ranked and prioritized over 100 different projects as part of this process.
Please proceed.
So once the decisions have been ranked and decisions made have been made to move forward with the projects, just to round that out, typically it moves into basically either a planning, design, or construction phase, depending upon the complexity of the project. Basically, the duration can vary by project. Projects do offer an opportunity for local and statewide, basically professionals and contractors to bid on these through our state procurement processes. Typical project costs can be impacted, and that can vary between economic market value, commodity pricing, scope increases due to either unknowns or changes. We have seen basically a cost increase. Basically, a project can come in above or below estimates. But recently, what we've been seeing is we have seen cost increases that have been in excess of basically 65% of engineers' estimates up to in excess of 100% of engineers' estimates. The reason why I mention that is because, again, I want to step back to that this is a committee process. And a lot of these details are being shared with the Facilities Council to ensure that when we're looking at these projects, we're trying to get the best cost estimate information we can be presented. And also those discussions are being had to where if we do have a project that is potentially may have some variation, that it's acknowledged by both the Facilities Council and passed along to OMB so we can have those discussions.
Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jason, can you talk a little bit about the, if there's been any issues with shortages with contractors and supply chain? And, you know, we've heard from sort of the private entities that they have to order things out or 2 to 3 years out. Is that complied or is that thought of when we are looking at deferred maintenance and our current budgets? So we're not having an item and then that money is being reverted back because of unspent funds, or how is that being utilized today, or is that a problem?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, that's a great question. We are seeing supply chain issues, both, I will say, from on the maintenance side of things, including through capital projects. We do have long lead items. Those things are being discussed with the project development phasing, if in the facilities council. But again, we are trying to utilize when we move into what I'll say is maybe the design and implementation phase of the projects. Those things are kind of trying to be taken into account early to where we can make the right decisions to either get those, what I'll say is critical items ordered early or procured, so that way it doesn't hold project delivery up.
Senator Wilson.
Another question we really didn't talk about is sort of IDA funds, you know, sort of the Infrastructure Act. Are there any items, or now that we have a little bit more guidance on any funds, so those funds could be used for any of our deferred maintenance and backlogs through these list of projects?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. I'm actually not familiar enough with to answer that question right at this time. I'd like to get back.
That guy might be able to.
Again, for the record, Neil Steinger, Office of Management and Budget. Senator Wilson, through the chair. Most of the IGA funds tend to be for new projects, not necessarily defer maintenance of existing facilities. But we can check and see if there's any maybe in specific agencies that might be able to be used there. Obviously, the village safe water increases through IGA. Some of that is maintenance on existing wastewater facilities, but not so much for these safe facilities we're talking about today.
Right.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes, thank you. In your deferred maintenance list here, you have items of building new infrastructure projects, facilities through DOT. So I was just wondering, and those new projects are listed through your sort of backlog of confined maintenance list. There's several projects that says build new facilities. So I just didn't know if those would be eligible in terms of building out. A lot of them are about maintenance sheds and salt and roads and airport structures. So I just didn't know if any of those could be used in terms of funding.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, we can take a look at those specific projects, but for the most part, the infrastructure dollars coming in are either from IGA specifically, are either for, you know, energy projects through AA or simply an increase in the surface transportation program. Certainly when there's a larger federal project where there's an opportunity to maybe reconstruct something that otherwise would be on the deferred maintenance list, we take that opportunity, and then you'd see that project drop off the list in a subsequent year. But usually these types of projects specifically can't be directly addressed with that specific pot of money. It would be if we're, say, you know, increasing lane miles on a road and have an opportunity to address a different facility in that area, we might be able to do so, but usually that's not as direct of an opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Did you have a question, Senator Wilson?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sakalakis, you talked about the engineer's estimates being somewhere times 65 to 100% off, and as they're reviewed by the council, the facilities council. I guess what measures are being taken to make it so that these estimates aren't so far... It's not like things can cost twice as much as they can otherwise. I mean, what measures are being taken by the DOT to go ahead and get these estimates more in line with what's more going to be reality, or what is reality?
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Olson, that's a great question. Basically, what a lot of our cost pricing data is based upon historic cost pricing with projects and delivery. And what we're seeing is, you know, contractor pricing currently coming in a little bit higher. So we're taking those actually bid amounts into account in averages and looking to see if we actually have trends of increase, or if it's individual project details that have driven up project costs, like remote location costs, those kind of things. So we're trying to take our current data that we're receiving in with current bid into account and more influential in weighting those factors in our engineers' estimates.
But the last comment that I have, Mr. Chairman, is that, you know, if you have somebody that's that far off, there's a problem there. Either somebody's incompetent or they don't have the experience to go ahead and come up with numbers that are more realistic. And because of that, we here at the finance table have got to double the money for some of these projects that are out there. And that's very concerning to me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Please proceed. Oh, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Sokolowskis, one thing I didn't see here in the prioritization, and it may just be that there's so little funding that you never get to it, but consideration of a project's impact on operating and maintenance costs going forward. Is there an element? I mean, I've got some highway maintenance stations that are really old buildings. And when the temperature drops, everybody puts on warm gear, they turn down the thermostat, and the oil truck still comes twice a week. They do not have little residential 275-gallon tanks. So is there an element in this prioritization process that looks at, can we save the state a dollar if we do this one versus the other one?
I'll say through the chair, Senator Keel. We do discuss that at the Facilities Council. I did kind of say if there is a chance to either save or recover cost. But at this time, I think it's probably limited funding available. We're addressing some other higher priority needs, you know, that are being presented at that time. So,
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess that sort of leads me to a question to the director then. When I look back at the start of the slides that Mr. Sokolowskis presented on, the header was statewide funding approach. But it's really a prioritization approach that he described. It's a choosing approach. When I look at the statewide funding approach, those are in the earlier slides, and I don't think $35 million this year, and certainly looking back at the history, gets to the bottom of that that 1 to 4% range that you talked about. So what's the statewide funding approach, and what's the maybe get the administration's proposal to jive with what you've presented.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. So the funding that we have available for deferred maintenance, of course, as you can see between that 2 to 4% range and then what we actually have in the budget is quite clearly pretty constrained. That's really primarily a result of, you know, the state's fiscal situation that we've had. You know, the budget as we proposed on December 15th, has a $260 million deficit. So there's not, you know, available additional funds to prioritize to every need and every use set that comes to the Office of Management and Budget as a priority of the state. You know, state facility maintenance is just one piece amongst a much larger pie of needs. What we do have as a mechanism to fund deferred maintenance is the Alaska Capital Income Fund, and that's our primary source of funding for deferred maintenance. The Alaska Capital Income Fund is populated by a ring-fenced portion of the permanent fund that has to be used for specific purposes per a court order, and that money flows into the Capital Income Fund at about $30 million a year. That's our primary source of funding. You can see in that earlier slide, there are a couple of projects outside of that capital income fund funding that, you know, we felt were greater needs that justified adding some additional, you know, unrestricted general fund to that. But clearly with a backlog of $700 million, we don't have the resources available to the state to address all of that all at once, while still addressing, you know, other state agency needs.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess then it's incumbent on the Finance Committee to find some resources to avoid what otherwise is a snowball toward something of a disaster for the state. But the director's question prompted, I can't help myself, about $30 million from the Alaska Capital Income Fund. I think I see about $34 million in proposed spending from it on slide 4. If memory serves, I think in the current fiscal year, we're set to actually maybe overspend it a little bit. Can you talk to us about the fund source and whether we're taking it, whether we're bouncing checks?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I don't believe we're bouncing checks from the Capital Income Fund. I say $30 million roughly because it is variable year to year depending upon the earnings from the fund. It goes a little bit above, a little bit below 30 every year. Some years, not the full amount's been appropriated because it's appropriated based off of an estimate, and then there may be some unobligated funds in that fund that we then carry into the next year's appropriation. So we do look when we're putting together the budget in December to ensure that the amount that we're appropriating matches to the estimated revenue into the fund that comes from the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation.
Senator Peel?
I apologize, Mr. Chairman. I didn't hear anything about are we taking the fund negative either in the current fiscal year or the next fiscal year's proposal?
Through the chair, Senator Peel, that's not the intention here, but it is based on an estimate of revenue. And so, you know, as we come in with next year's budget, if so, say revenue came in much lower than what was projected for fiscal year 24, in fiscal year 25, we would have less money available that we could appropriate from the capital income fund in that year. The nature of these projects being that they do take multiple years to spend down those appropriations. We have in the past managed this on a cash basis in terms of, you know, paying out for the bills as they come in and ensuring there's sufficient cash to meet those expenditures and then adjusting appropriations in future years. So we do have mechanisms to ensure that we're not bouncing checks on any of these projects, but it just does mean that what we have available for deferred maintenance is the earnings that go into the capital income fund, which is always a projection each year.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Please proceed.
So moving to slide 15 and on our appendix section, these are graphs and tables and information for reference. Here is a count of state agency or facilities by state agency. You can see, again, Department of Transportation Public Facilities has the most individual facilities, followed by the university. And then this is the same concept, but by square footage. And you can see the university, while they have less facilities than DOT, has significantly larger facilities and has the most space by facility, which is generally why they have a much larger deferred maintenance backlog than agencies. And on slide 17, the state has disposed of a number of state facilities over the years, and this is a list of facilities that we've disposed of that were no longer necessary to meet the mission of a given agency.
Any questions on that presentation? Senator Wilson, then Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you provide a sort of
mission? Senator Wilson.
Yes. Can you provide how many facilities have been sold? You know, the state, some of these state disposed assets, and sort of the amount of revenue in the past 3 years to the committee?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. Yes, we can catalog that data. This slide just shows, you know, examples of facilities, but clearly doesn't have the amount that we may have collected from that. But we can get back to you in writing.
Thank you. Senator Wilson. Thank you. Senator Click Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Jason, welcome again. But how long have you been on the job now officially? I mean, you've been transitioning, but you've got the range now, correct?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that's correct. On the job since beginning of December.
Official end of follow-up. Have you... Knowing you, I'm sure you're probably going to do a system-wide review of your new organization to make sure you're hitting all the marks and look for improvements.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, you know me well enough that, yeah, that's kind of a top priority for me there. It's a big organization, so I've got a lot to cover real quick.
Good. I just wanted to get that on the record for the rest of my colleagues. And if you could give us one more, and I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, that number of unfilled positions in your organization. And the last thing I want to mention is we had a facility last year collapse due to a snow load. And are you making sure we're taking that lesson learned and sending it throughout the rest of our facilities to watch the snow load on our roofs in these winter months?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, yes, we can easily provide a vacant position count for our division. And then, yes, we're playing close attention to snow loads throughout the division.
So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Wilson.
Thank you. Director Neil, sorry, not talk today. What's the status of the computerized maintenance management system for facilities?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, actually, I might defer that question to Director Sakalakis.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. Currently, right now, I'm working to get up to speed myself on that, so I apologize for not having that information directly here today. But we are working at going live with actually a couple of the components and have extended our delivery on several different components within the system. Primarily looking at focusing on getting all of our maintenance and operation systems into that system first, and then looking at developing basically the other system, all the other components of that system. And I apologize, I can't speak to the exact details on that today.
Thank you, Senator Wilson. Mr. Director, do you have any additional, were you going to cover the universities at this time? Or?
Chair Hoffman, I believe we actually have representatives from the university that can cover that can cover their deferred maintenance needs here in the room. Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. My name is Chad Hutchison. I'm the State Director for the University of Alaska System. And I do have my own PowerPoint that we can perhaps put up on the screen. It'd be easier to...
At ease, Mr. Chair.
Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. We are going over the our presentation for the University of Alaska or their deferred maintenance. Please identify yourself for the record again and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchison. I'm the Director of State Relations for the University of Alaska System. I also have with me online Chris McConnell, Facilities Director for UAA, Cameron Wolford, Facilities Director for UAF, and Nathan Lay, Facilities Director for UAS. In addition, we also have our Budget Director, Alicia Kruckenberg, who can technical financial questions. There's two things that Senate Finance should have received by now. One was a document that was prepared by President Pitney, and it was our priority list for the entire system. That was distributed to Senator Hoffman's office yesterday. And then our Red Book that we have every year that talks about some of the further details as it relates to our deferred maintenance needs has been distributed to the Senate Finance Committee. So that's always a good resource, and we recommend if people have further questions, they can always adhere to that and then come back and see myself or my colleague, Sarah Furman. So for the purpose of this presentation, the focus is going to be on deferred maintenance. I will talk about some of the other building needs that we have that we're orbiting, just so you have a complete picture as we go forward and think about the priority list for the university as a foundation, and some of this was covered in the previous presentation, but I will briefly talk about it. The university historically has had a tremendous backlog. That is true. $1.5 billion is what the current status is. We'll see a chart in a few moments that visualizes that. Our facility profile, we have a wide mission. We do research. We do residential halls. We have a community service, community service mission. We have a lot of partnerships with other members of the community to help what we believe to help build a better Alaska. And our facilities are very, they are varied. There's general offices, there's classrooms, we have complex laboratories, we have rocket launch facilities, the Geophysical Institute up in Fairbanks, so sophisticated equipment in some of these laboratories, and there's, and its use is multi-use as far as our partnerships with other federal agencies, scientists around the world, et cetera. So we're very pleased about that. Total facilities, 394, over 7.9 million square feet, and the average age is 35 years. So we do have aging buildings. The inflation adjusted value of the buildings, $4.9 billion. As I stated before, $1.5 billion as it relates to the backlog, specifically to deferred maintenance. As far as the stewardship goes, we are trying to leverage our shrinking maintenance budgets as much as we possibly can to extend the life of those buildings. It is a high focus, there's no doubt, and we can get further details from some of our good experts that are on the telephone today if we need more details on that. We are trying to decrease our overall footprint. We're moving from lease-to-owned, and we're trying to sell or demolish underutilized facilities. So we're doing our very best to harness our value and ensure that we're as efficient as possible. As far as funding goes, it is true, and many on this committee know this, that there's been a lack of maintenance funding for many, many years. That's been a challenge. We're very grateful for what the legislature did last year with regards to Moore and Bartlett Hall. That was a big need, particularly on the UAF campus. That was approaching systemic failure of our sewer and water system, and that would have been a very difficult situation for those students. And so we're very pleased to report that we're on track as far as construction goes. And we have Cam Wolford online that can discuss that further if there's further questions about the progress on Moore and Bartlett. But we're on track for construction, and we're pleased about that. Unplanned closures creates hardships for the students. It does happen, and the winters are cold, and that's a difficult thing, especially up in the interior, and that's something that we like to avoid whenever possible. And we're hoping that we can always show that we're creating good value to maintenance what we can, but at the end of the day, it does require assistance as much as possible in legislation. Our burn rate, you can see there, that's been discussed before, $35 to $15 million. We think that in a couple of years we can make good use of that and move forward with our deferred maintenance and renewal projects. So this is the slide. I'm on slide three.
Before you,
yes.
Are there any questions on the first slide? How is the new power plant working?
Senator Hoffman, we're pleased to report the power plant is heating UAF and providing good value for that university, and it's cherished by many.
Thanks to past President Pete Kelly. Please proceed.
Sir. So on slide 3, here is a visual representation of deferred maintenance and how it relates to, you see the state appropriation, and I'll explain kind of what we're looking at with this chart. So first of all, the green line in the middle, that's the minimal request the university historically makes, $50 million. That's the threshold that we've set for ourselves with yearly requests. The state appropriation, you can see, there have been years where there has been ability to make a larger appropriation. And you'll notice that when you look at the red line, which is the deferred maintenance and the R&R backlog, if we are able to make an appropriation around the $50 million amount, that red line stands relatively close as far as a manageable need as it relates to the backlog. You can see as time has gone on that when the state appropriation is lower, then the backlog increases. And right now we're over $1.5 billion, pretty substantial amount. The FY23, very grateful for the assistance that happened last year. You're looking at, that's Moore and Bartlett there, so very, very pleased about that. But that's just a visual representation that kind of shows you the direct correlation between funding and what the backlog is and what we could reasonably expect in the future based on historical data. So this is something I want to talk about as far as our number one. If you look at the sheet that was distributed to Senator Hoffman's office, prepared by President Pitney, our number one priority is UAA, it's the Professional Studies Building, the Wendy Williamson Auditorium, the Social Sciences Building, and the Consortium Library. There are some issues with HVAC, with the electrical systems, mechanical issues. The buildings are older, and we have a few experts online that can discuss the focus there. And I just want to make sure that that's highlighted first and foremost from the perspective of the entire system. We do have, just to put everything in total context, a facility modernization. This is a $2 million space renovation for the WAMI expansion, which was included in the governor's proposed budget, so we're very pleased about that. And that's in an effort to meet the expanding need for medical doctors in the state of Alaska, have them come back to Alaska. The voices have been raised, and we worked with the governor on that space, and we're very pleased that's been included. But I want to make sure that's understood as we focus on our deferred maintenance in particular. The other request, the $54.8 million, that's the remainder of the list that everybody has here, not including the UAA number one priority projects. And then the Learning Commons, UAF Student Affairs Center, and the UAS lab consolidation, that's really whole buildings. It's actually our facilities modernization. And that's more than just deferred maintenance on individual systems. Those are actual revamps and modernizations of entire buildings. So we've put those in a special category, but it's very important to understand the entire context, and so that's why I mention it here. Reiterates what I spoke about earlier with UAA. You can see it at the top category, $17.5 million. There's the WAMI expansion at $2 million, the College of Health at the Munson Run Hall. And then it's important to know the two other ones. They're really just receipt authority, but federal authority for the leadership archive. That's there's an effort to look at placing perhaps some of the artifacts and some of the good material from Congressman Young and other great leaders throughout the history of Alaska at UAA. There might be a federal receipt connection to that, and so we want to make sure that was known that is essentially receipt authority, and so we want to include that so you understand the entire context upon which we make our requests. And the $2.5 million, That is, again, receipt authority, and that's in connection with the Fairbanks North Star Borough. It's about child care. They're having a real challenge with child care for young employees, people in the borough, people throughout the community, and there's the potential that there could be a partnership where a $2.5 million grant could be used to help with a child care facility, give people more options in the interior. So that's what you see there. Those bottom two, those are receipt authority. So very, I want to make sure I'm very clear about that. So here is just, if you think about the list that President Pitney's prepared, it's the one pager. This is items 2 and 3, and this is UAS. We'll go to that one first. That's $3.6 million. It's about roofs, leaky roofs. They are having a real challenge at the Technical Education Center in Juneau. You have the Maritime Training Center in Ketchikan, and you have the Sitka Hangar. They have leaking problems. You know, obviously the weather there, a real challenge. Those are older buildings. And that's our number two priority across the entire system, is to repair those roofs to give those students a better opportunity to learn in an environment that meets the standards I think that we can expect in higher education. So number three on the entire priority list, but it's second there, the $11.3 million, and that's UAF again. That's student safety across the campus. We want safe and compliant. Safety and compliance are a top priority. We want to make sure that our features are meant to protect the occupants. And the work also includes updating the ventilation systems, the laboratories, replacing fire alarms, creating accessibility when it comes to the buildings, and replacing some elevators. So that is the number three top priority for the entire university. And then again, this is modernization. So this is a different space in the sense these are actual buildings, and we just want to make sure these are included so you understand the entire context upon which we are making our deferred maintenance request. And there you see they're modernizing, for example, the Lola Tilly Commons at UAF, which is going to be the centralized student affairs facility where everybody can gather and work on educational purposes together, ensure that the students have an environment to coalesce and have that good student and learning experience. We just want to make sure that those three items are included just for your awareness. You see UAS in the Natural Sciences Building. We're trying to relocate and consolidate the programs from the Science Research Lab to the Anderson Building and to bring it all together. And we think that's better for the economy, better for the continuity of the program and the synergy of the program. And then you see up at the top, UAA, the Health Workforce Diversity Expansion and Library Learning Commons. And we're renovating Munson Room Hall, trying to make sure that we have good health workforce training and making sure the commons are relocated to the consortium library. So with that, this just gives demonstration purposes. This is the Board of Regents request versus what was actually funded in the governor's budget. Just for your awareness purposes, you can see some of it was already mentioned. And then you have, so for example, the expansion of the College of Health and WAMI, $2 million there, very grateful for that. And then you see essentially the Federal Receipt Authority for the Leadership Archives at UAF and the potential for the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the early childhood development. And then the modernization that we requested at this point in time, not been funded by the governor's proposal. And the next few slides, these are just larger versions of what everybody has in their hands here on the one pager prepared by President Pitney. This just shows the overall priority list when it comes to the University of Alaska system. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do any members have questions? Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being here, Mr. Hutchinson. I believe we appropriated money for drones last year. Has that money been completely expended?
Senator Merrick, through the chair, it's in the process of being expended. The percentage that I remember last, I think, I don't want to overspeak. So I do know that we have a percentage spend that's going on right now. I know that that's there's talks about buying parts of the Nenana Airport. There's an expansion as it relates to the East Ramp, and I know the money's being spent on development, further development of the education program, and making sure that the students can expand at the same rate that the program itself is expanding. We'll get you the exact percentage amount. I know that the spend has been going on, and they're in the millions. But it's a $10 million amount that was graciously that we received last year, and we're grateful for that. But I'll get you the exact amount about where we're at as far as the total spend. But it's an exciting thing. The drone program is really taking off. We do have a lot of private partnerships that are very interested. There's a request for $10 million this year. With phase two, we are supported by the governor. And we always have to provide good value and show that we're helping all of Alaska. I think the drone program does that. I think it's much more than just the interior. I think that we're going to see good space on all parts of Alaska. So I will get you that number with the percentages.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Merrick. Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hutchison, I'm just a little concerned about some of the backlogs here and the university, and some of these things don't seem that to be that old of buildings. You know, the Ansett building needs another $4 million. It's not a very old building. The UAA, Alaska Airlines Center, combined is about $10 million. I know we give the general lump sum appropriation. I just wonder if we can get a list of what maintenance activities the is spent on a yearly basis at the university. Your UAA consortium library right now is at $35 million, plus you're asking for additional $14 million, so about $50 million. But instead of building a leader's archive facility, it looks like we should replace the failing elevator or the stairs that are failing. Yeah. Seem to be a higher life safety priority versus a monument to Alaska leaders.
Senator Wilson, through the chair, your point's well taken. I would say that the leadership archive, there's others around the state that think that the value of that is high in the sense of preservation of history. But your point is well taken about the elevators and making sure that we're meeting those needs too. I think that with some of the newer buildings that you mentioned, I think the president has recognized that there are maintenance issues with buildings. It's just always going to occur. But she has prioritized what she believes to be the highest need, which is the ones that are much older. You will see on the list that there are what I consider to be younger buildings. But as far as funding and scarce dollars, I think the president believes that the projects that we talked about there take her priority, especially when those dollars were scarce. But for awareness purposes, though, it is important that everyone understands that even some of those other buildings have those maintenance issues. But
Senator Wilson.
I guess if I could, Mr. Chair, it just seems that there's no funding for just what I would consider ongoing operational issues and costs. When I look at the backlogs, these are things that are known to have a life expectancy that are really valuable life safety issues. You know, I've just, from carbon monoxide detectors to exhaust fans to replacing the glycol. I mean, I'm just concerned that I just want to see the university's maintenance budget and see how that's been applied throughout the years. I'm just concerned that they come to the legislature for all their maintenance funding instead of more than just their operational costs.
Mr. Hutchison.
And Senator Wilson, to further address your question too, I want to make sure it's clear with the leadership archive, that's federal receipts. And so that's there's a DC component to that. And I just want to make sure that's on the record that that's federal.
Senator Wilson. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. I have several questions, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
Mr. Hutchison, thank you for being here today. Does the Board of Regents have a building construction maintenance deferred maintenance committee that reviews these projects before you bring them forward to us?
Senator Bishop, through the chair, we certainly do a vetting process with regards to all things deferred maintenance. And so there is a process that occurs where we analyze the wisdom of one priority versus another. And then President Pitney makes a decision based on the analysis compiled that leads you to what we hope is a consolidated list that makes it easy for people to see and consider.
Thank you. If I might proceed.
Please proceed.
Page 3 on your, if you go to just back to page 3, can you give me your total outstanding bonded debt? Is that about 60, 70 million or?
Senator Bishop, I have a number in my head, but I will defer to
Alicia's online, I believe.
Director Kruckenberg, if she can answer that question, that would be appreciated.
Alicia?
For the record, this is Alicia Kruckenberg, and if you give me a few minutes, I can find that information. I don't have it off the top of my head. It may be fully expended by or fully paid for by this at this point, but I am not sure.
That's fine. You with the chair's indulgence, you can just get back to the committee with that question, and that's all I have. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Hutchinson, as you look at public policy and things like that, and the tremendous need of $1.5 billion is fairly concerning. It looks like the university is almost in the real estate business or competing with that. I guess is the thought there that maybe the university has too many facilities and that it may be the prudent thing financially to go ahead and liquidate or get rid of some of them?
Senator Olson, through the chair, it's a very worthwhile question. We're always doing that analysis to see if we can do a maximum efficiency of space. There's some items, some laboratories, some research environments where you have to have a certain amount of square footage to make sure you have the proper equipment and everything that comes with that.
Sure.
It is true that we're in the process of when there is an opportunity, we have the UA Lands department. We have others that are looking to make those sorts of divestment when it's necessary and appropriate. And the university has done that over the years. There is a challenge in the sense that you're doing a balance. There's one of the things that President Bidney has talked about is that she's trying to boost enrollment. We want to make sure that enrollment declines have been pretty significant over the last 10 years for various different reasons, and one of them you probably could argue that is funding. And we're trying to make ourselves more efficient for the good of Alaska and less dependent on state dollars if possible. So in order to have that, you have to have a certain quality of residence halls. You've got a certain number of residence halls. You've got to make sure that you have a capacity to meet that need to make us less dependent on state dollars. So that there's that balance that we're doing, and it is true when it becomes appropriate, there is a divestment, and we do that we're always doing that analysis on a regular basis.
If I could continue, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
The concern I have was that when you said that the general, I think it's on slide 2, you talked about you're starting to get rid of your leased buildings and own more of the facilities that you have there. With knowing how buildings deteriorate over the time, you're asking for a lot larger deferred maintenance as you look 10 years down the line. So I guess that if you have a leased facility, I realize you don't own it, but once you're done with the lease, you don't have to worry about the maintenance. And I guess that's the concern that I have. The other question that I have, though, is that has to do with the rocket launch facility down there in Kodiak. I guess how many other universities are involved with rocket launch facilities throughout the nation?
Senator Olson, through the chair, that's a question I'll have to get back on you because I do not know the answer off the top of my head, but I'll make sure that we connect you with the appropriate experts and I could speak to you about that.
I remember when Senator Ted Stevens was instrumental in getting that facility down there, and at the time there was great hope that maybe it would be a cash positive project that we were getting involved with, but over the years, I've not seen that that dream fulfilled. It was, and now it's kind of turned into a financial nightmare almost because of all the money that has to go down there from the state.
Senator Olson, we'll get the answer to that question and to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Any other questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe a follow-up on Senator Olson's first question. Do you have a proportion, roughly, of facilities sold or otherwise divested to facilities built? Rough number? Rough.
Senator Keel, through the chair. I would be speaking over my head if I gave you a rough number right now, so let me talk to our experts and make sure we get you an appropriate figure for you.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Keel.
I know the proportion here at my campus, and I just wonder how that compares statewide. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson, for that presentation. Okay, that concludes the meeting today. The next meeting will be on Monday, January 30th at 9 a.m. We will have a presentation by the Legislative Finance Director, Alex Painter, on Senate Bill 40, the operating budget, Senate Bill 41, the capital budget, and Senate Bill 42, the mental health budget. With that, we stand adjourned.